Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Constructive Criticism. I'm your host, Spencer, and I am joined by my co-host from Salt Lake City somehow, Michael Hinderrocker.
How's it going?
I literally thought we were recording tomorrow because you were in Japan today.
Well,
but today was yesterday in Japan.
I don't know. I sat on a plane for a long time and then I was home. So, you know, here we are.
It's all a blur, man. It's all a blur for Solo Pro Michael Hinderrocker.
You sit on a plane for... Sorry. You want to talk about vehicles crewing vehicles. It was the taxi to the train, to the plane, to the airport, to the shuttle, to the terminal, to the plane, to the car, to the home.
To the home. Home is the final destination.
It felt like vehicles crewing vehicles there.
Well, there weren't a lot of vehicles at this Pro Tour, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. But first, we want to mention our sponsor. Don't forget our sponsors, both Oasis Games and the Mana Base. Oasis Games has everything you need in Magic. Check them out at mtgoasis.com. Get 15% off of your first order by using the code CCMTG at checkout. You can get 4% off of every order by using the code Would That Be Good? We had one listener message us this week talking about how amazing that deal was. They got back into Standard. They got their Hazarettes way cheaper than they could get them on SCG. And then they got an additional 15% off. Oasis Games is the place to buy Magic the Gathering singles. Check them out at mtgoasis.com.
I have to wonder if that was after Alex changed the prices on Hazarettes and then the auto price updater changed it back.
That's so great.
if they were really excited about their deal on Hazarettes,
I didn't know that happened. That's great. You can also check out the Mana Base. They're the other place that sponsors this podcast. They have a sponsor themselves in Fusion Gaming. If you're looking for sealed product, Fusion Gaming is the place to do it. Check them out at fusiongaming.com. You can also check out the Mana Base for all of their amazing Magic content. They support content creators like us or Nikachu. If you're looking for Magic content from up-and-coming creators, that is the place to do it. So thank you so much to both the Mana Base and Oasis Game for all of their support. The show isn't possible without our sponsors, and we really, really appreciate them. You can also check out the other shows on the network, both our sister podcast at Limited Time Only. It's funny that we've had so much trouble with time zones. We missed last week's Limited Time Only because Danny was like, well, it's Thursday now. And we're like, well, it's not Thursday here.
Oh, so he was scheduled to do it during the Pro Tour?
Yeah, so I'm like, are we doing this? And then Mason was like, well, no, because, you know, that's during the Pro Tour. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that wouldn't work.
Good to know.
Live from the Pro Tour floor, Danny Castro.
Yeah, this draft deck was bad right now. The one that I'm drafting.
Don't do what I just did at the Pro Tour. Yeah, so check out Limited Time Only. It's every Thursday at twitch.tv/ccmtg at 11 p.m. Eastern. You can also check out the newest podcast on our network, Common Knowledge, a pauper podcast about getting better at Magic the Gathering. It's Magic in its most affordable way. So check them out at just on our YouTube channel. They go live every Tuesday. They're doing Wednesday because we thought we were doing Tuesday. Time zones are confusing, people. That's all there is to it. You can also support the podcast directly by becoming a Patreon. We have no new patrons this week, but we really appreciate all the patron support we've been getting. You know, we hit a goal that we set a long time ago just recently, just like an internal goal, and it just really means a lot to me. In fact, I just want to say that, like, this show really means a lot to me as I, like, listen to Spike Feed, who I want to give a shout out to this week, hit episode 200. And I kind of think about, like, the fact that we've missed, I don't know, 8 to 13 weeks of our own show. Like, I've been doing this podcast for over 4 years, and the listeners mean a lot to me. Like, I had a really bad day at work today, and it's really refreshing to be able to come and do this show for our listeners, and the support that we get from Patreon, like, really helps it so that I can validate it to my wife, like, that I get to keep doing this show. So thank you. It really does mean the world to me, and I'm, like, actually getting a little stressed about episode 200. Like, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to celebrate 200 episodes of, like, something that's been a part of my life for a really long time at this point. And, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's always cool to see things that you are a part of and things that you, Spencer, have spent a lot of time working on just validated. And, I mean, episode 200 is a part of that, but so is the support that we received not only from the patron, but just from the Facebook group.
Just from the listeners, everybody, right? Like, it's not...
Just the positivity that we received. Yeah. It's really nice.
Whether it's just, like, a hit the subscribe button on YouTube or like a friendly message, like we just really appreciate our listeners. I was so relieved to get to do this podcast today because it's like a break from reality for me, and Michael had to wake up, but
yeah, oh man, well, so it's a break from unreality for me, which is also okay. I'm mostly happy with that.
But if you are patron of the show, that means that you can donate any amount that you see fit, starting at $1 more per month. Anything is really appreciated. You get to ask a question of the week. We're going to move on to what our $5 more patrons get. One of their benefits of being a constructive critic, meaning you donate $5 or more, is submitting a deck doctor. So this is a chance for you to submit a deck for us to go in depth on in the show, talk about what we like, what we would change, and where we think the deck stands today. So Michael, why don't you go ahead and take a look at our deck doctor for this week and go ahead and read the deck list for us.
Let's see. So this deck is 4 Collected Company, 4 Court of Calling, 4 Noble Hierarch, 2 Birds of Paradise, 4 Knight of the Reliquary, 4 Devoted Druid, 3 Spell Queller, 3 Vizier of Remedies, 3 Eternal Witness, 2 Duskwatch Recruiter, 1 Tireless Tracker, 1 Scavenging Ooze, 1 Reflector Mage, 1 Walking Ballista, 1 Ronus the Indomitable, 2 Retreat to Coral Helm, and 21... standard lands for this mana base, including a Keswick Wolfrun and a Gavinny Township.
I think there's 23 lands in this deck.
Oh, are there 23? It's just listed as 21?
Yeah.
Okay. But including a Keswick Wolfrun, Gavinny Township, and Horizon Canopy. The sideboard is 1 Linvala, Keeper of Silence, 1 Izzet Staticaster, 1 Eidolon of Rhetoric, 1 Kitaki War's Wage, 1 Quasali Pride Mage, 1 Tamiyo Field Researcher, 1 Bajuka Bog, 1 Ghost Quarter, 2 Kitchen Finks, 2 Unified Will, and 3 Path to Exile.
Okay, so let's start with the things that we like. First of all, I really like this version of counters rather than the just straight green-white version. I think that having the Knight of the Reliquary retreat combo as well as Spell Queller and a better sideboard is really important for this deck. I think that it makes this deck significantly better than just the straight green-white versions.
I agree with that, too. I really like having access to Spell Queller when I'm going to play this many dorks. I like having access to Knight when I'm playing this many dorks. I think the one-ofs you get to play are a little bit better. I think just in general, the Abzan Company shell feels a little bit underpowered, where this deck, while still a little bit clunky at times, I think the overall deck just has a little bit higher power level.
I agree completely. I think the other thing that I like about this deck is the fact that it does have a way to play a fair game, right? Like,
yeah,
this deck can play a Gavinny Township game if it has to do that.
Well, or just a Spell Queller game, right? I mean, yeah, it really, like, you Spell Quell a couple of spells and your opponent's mostly dead. I think just like that and Knight, kind of one. It's very rare that both Knight of the Reliquary and Spell Queller are bad, and in matchups where they are both bad, your combo is great. So yep. I think it just gives you a lot of play.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that between Court of Calling and Collected Company, there's a lot here that lets you play the deck in particular ways according to particular matchups, which I have not seen from a Court Company deck since they start. Like, that's actually one of my problems with Abzan Company, is I always felt like it was trying to do one thing, and like if that one thing was bad, your deck was just like a pile of bad cards. Whereas with this deck, like, I can play my Courts and Companies according to the matchup.
Yeah, there's a little bit more meat on the bones, right? I mean, just being able to hit all of your one-ofs, minus the Walking Ballista, are fine hits. Duskwatch is a fine hit for the most part. Witness is a pretty good hit. Spellqueller and Knight are obviously great.
So speaking of the ones, let's actually move to the things that we might change about this deck. I actually, every time I see Reflector Mage in these decks, it like hurts me on the inside a little bit. I feel like it's only good against Gurmag Angler. Like, I really don't like that card in this deck. I feel like you're cutting a Spellqueller to have a hit against Gurmag Angler.
I think it's pretty good against Death Shadow in general. A lot of the time,
if they're not playing green.
That's most of them at this point, right? So if
okay, sure. So like specifically, if you're not playing against Jun Death Shadow and you're playing against the rest of the Shadow variants.
Yeah, I think that card is maybe narrow but defensible. You know, I'm happy to have in my deck.
But I don't like it in other matchups.
Right. Right. No, I mean, that's what I'm saying, that it's narrow, but if that's a matchup you're playing a lot, being able to bounce a Death Shadow or a Delve creature, I think, is mostly fine.
I feel like you're mostly good against Shadow decks in general, though, aren't you?
I don't know. I never felt that way with the Lower the Ground versions. I would imagine this version has a better matchup there, but it's probably not, like, easy.
Interesting. I would think between Path Out of the Sideboard and just like a combo that's this quick, Shadow, like, because most of its turn are dedicated to setting itself up, have a little bit of trouble trying to disrupt you.
You can struggle with Stubborn Denial, you can struggle with any just removal spells, and you can struggle with Thoughtseize. So all of their interaction.
Do you struggle with Thoughtseize? Like, I feel like your deck is so... Well, oh, sure. If you keep specifically, like, a linear hand, that could be true, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what I would say is that your deck can be a little more clunky. I mean, that's mostly the reason that Death Shadow is good, right? It's good at making the game about being lean and then being much leaner than you.
Okay. So you had a question about this list right when it popped up.
Yeah, so I don't really know why we're playing a Walking Ballista and a Ronus. That seems crazy, given that we also have Eternal Witness.
So what do you mean by that? Like, why do you want to pick a lane?
So if we're going to generally... So, like, if we're winning via combo, right, we're almost always going to have either a Duskwatch Recruiter... Or if we're winning via the Devoted Druid combo, we're going to have to always have a Duskwatch Recruiter or just naturally draw the Walking Ballista or Ronus. But because the conditions are the same, my preference is for more Duskwatch Recruiters and less Walking Ballista and Ronus, with the idea being that they're probably the worst cards in the deck just on a straight-up card-for-card basis. I very rarely seen people play two, and I can't really think of a good reason off the top of my head.
I do think most of the list played Walking Ballista, because with the infinite mana, like, it's harder to interact with. Whereas with a Ronus, like, you pump a bunch of dudes. Actually,
but you have to go to your attack step. Right?
Yeah, you have to go to your attack step. That being said, I actually wonder if Ronus is still better now that I'm thinking about it. I actually wonder if, because of, like, the value of just hitting, being a collected company hit on its own, if it might be better. But I don't know, because, like, you're already playing E-Witness, so does it really matter? It's
close. It might be better in this specific list. One of the things I don't like about Ronus specifically is that if you only play a Ronus, he can get, like, pathed or something like that. Not that it's a huge deal, given that you would be able to draw and play, like, your entire deck on the turn that you comboed regardless. So I don't know that it's like a big problem, but it's just something to consider if you decide to play only a Ronus.
Sure. Overall, where do we think this deck stands? I think we kind of mentioned that. I actually like this deck more than the other company core decks.
I do too. I really like having access to Staticaster out of the board. I mean, I think your Affinity matchup would already be favorable, but that card is outstanding in that matchup.
I also really like Unified Will in these style of decks. I think that you're gaining a lot from getting that as a counterspell versus other decks that have to play something else.
Agreed.
So yeah, overall, I would just consider your one of, specifically in your main deck, I actually really like your sideboard.
Yeah, I do too. I think that every card looking at it makes sense.
I agree. I don't know how I feel about Reflector Mage, and I, like Michael, I would try and pick a lane on some of the other one ofs. So thank you so much for that list, and it was really fun to talk about. So we really appreciate our patrons who submit these decks for us to talk about, and we hope that we're helpful when they do that. So all right, let's move on to our first segment of the show. Michael, what place did you get in the Rookie of the Year race?
I don't know. Probably like 10th.
All right. Well, top 10 rookie of the year finisher, Michael Hinderaker.
Oh, man. Such an accomplishment.
What was your hashtag always improving moment? And what is hashtag always improving?
Well, I think always improving sums up a lot of the ideas of this podcast, which are that we're always trying to improve, or striving to improve, sorry. Striving and trying became, you know, a combo word there. We're always striving to improve. And we're looking, it doesn't necessarily have to be big things. We're just looking to find any little thing and keep chipping away at it. With the idea that if you're not getting better, you're usually getting worse. And that the way to improve in magic and oftentimes in life in general is just bit by bit.
And through reflection, like.
Yeah. So, you know, being taking kind of an active role in thinking about what we're trying to do.
Yeah. So what was your always improving moment this week?
Well, so I spent a lot of the time trying to hammer out an exact deck list. But one of I think my favorite moment of the week was just getting to really work with Aaron on actually hammering out the details of the mono red list we ended up playing. And just learning from his attention to detail and thoughtfulness. I had a very good time working with him and Danny and Alex, despite, you know, I think Aaron had the best finish, but none of us cashed. So, you know, it wasn't a great tournament on the whole, but I felt like I learned a lot from getting to work with him, and I had a good time with all of them, certainly.
So when you talk about attention to detail, what do you think you learned from Aaron specifically on that?
I think just his wanting to go very slowly through every single card in the deck list as we're trying to justify exactly what number to play, but just, okay, so what matchups are we happier with, you know, three of this as opposed to two, and what is the cost when we sideboard, and what is the, just like trying, sometimes it's hard to figure out exactly what you should be playing. I mean, oftentimes it's very hard to figure out exactly the 75 you want to register.
Yeah.
But I think that much like we talk about always improving as like being better is something that improves with being really conscientious with your thought process and decision-making process. I enjoyed getting to see sort of how Aaron's brain worked with relation to how do we build deck lists.
That's so awesome. And I think that like, it's always interesting to get outside of your immediate peer group in Magic. Where it's where like you go to, I mean, even inviting Danny into our group, right, has really kind of opened up like this whole new way of testing, jamming, just like talking nonstop about Magic. It's something that like, I mean, Danny will just talk nonstop anyway, but like the idea of like he likes talking about off the wall things, right? Like that you, me, and Matt and Casey would mostly just be like, well, that's nonsense. Like, we're not talking about that. Like, Danny mm-hmm. really enjoys that. And, like, when it comes to Aaron, I remember when we had Team Oasis games and he wrote his first limited summary of our limited testing for the team. And everybody looked at that and there was like, well, that if that was an article published, that would have been one of the best articles I've ever read. Because he was very detail oriented and exactly like, why did you pick this card over this card? What was your ultimate plan when you picked this card? Where do you think that it ended up in your deck? What were the other picks and why did you make that one? And if you had made this one, how would your deck ended up? Do you remember the pick six pick down? Like, he's just very focused and very that is not the right word. I was gonna say methodical, but that's not the right word. He's very I can't think of a word that describes Aaron other than awesome, but I really appreciate Aaron's willingness to care deeply about the details.
Yeah, and it's refreshing in that it makes you question. So I've had this experience playing a lot of Magic on Skype where sometimes like things that you will take for granted as being correct, just having to actually like having someone say, "Are you sure that's right?" And it's not necessarily about whether the play is actually correct or not, or whether the card choice is actually correct or not, as much as it is like, okay, let's think about what this does. And sometimes a thought that you have there can cause you to further realize something about another card or another play or sequence that you've been. Sometimes getting your brain going can lead you to interesting places, even if you think that, like, the card being questioned or the line being questioned is relatively obvious.
Yeah. So for me this week, one of the things that I tried to focus on is kind of practicing what I preach. Oftentimes, I mean, I always tell people, like, you're watching coverage incorrectly if your entire point of coverage is to, like, figure out how smart you are and correct people. And one of the things that I really try to learn is, like, what do others think of this draft format? What do others think of this standard format? What turns or what ways are people sequencing things that are different than how I would sequence them? You know, whether it's like saving your braid and casting a different spell, or, you know, sequencing your snake after or before your walking bullet, like whatever it is, I want to see how they were doing it in specific matchups and then think about it. Like, why did they do it this way? What could their opponent have had? What were they thinking that their opponent had? And it really helped me this week, both in deck building, as I was hammering over lists for things like the RPTQ in Denver, and also just as a mental exercise, like trying to, like, the Pro Tour is an opportunity to watch really, really good Magic players. Like, really good. And if you're taking that opportunity to try and correct those Magic players, you're just wrong. Because, like, you would be on the Pro Tour. So, I don't know.
I mean, in the sense that everyone makes mistakes, but
yes.
Watching, you know, the semifinal match, taking away that the guy forgot to play a spell and lost to Paolo because of it, like, it's just, it's a ridiculous thing to get fixated on.
Yeah. I appreciated the opportunity to learn from these people, and I tried to do what I could to take advantage of it this week. So, all right. So, card of the week. From our patrons, we know that it's really important for you guys to get, like, sweet cards. We want to take a card of the week as an opportunity to give out sweet Magic cards. If you're a patron of $3 or more per month, you're eligible for card of the week. It's not something we do every week right now. It's something that we plan on doing. We were going to do it every week, but we learned that you guys want a playset of highly sought-after cards. Excuse me. So sorry. And so we want to take the opportunity to do that for you. And this week, there was a very clear card that deserved card of the week. And we want to take the opportunity to give that to one of our patrons. We want to take the opportunity to give that to Easton Henry. So, Easton, you have won a playset of Hazoret the Fervent. This wasn't close, right? Like,
oh, yeah, and this card is insane. It's so insane that one of my discussions with one of my good friends involved... So normally you might watch your opponent for putting cards in their lap to sneak them into their hand later. We were talking about the reverse lap as being the cheat to watch for in this tournament. So rather than drawing extra cards, you're trying to discard extra cards to turn on your Hazoret faster.
So first of all, that's not funny.
Second of all, it is funny. That was like a really serious thing. Yeah, we were like, man, if someone is caught cheating during this tournament, I can almost guarantee it will be slipping cards out of their hand to turn on their Hazoret.
It's so funny. Hazoret is just super, super powerful. So for those who know, it's a 5/4 legendary god, and it has haste. It can only attack if you have one or less cards in hand, as you learned from the the semifinals.
Yeah. But haste and indestructible.
Indestructible.
And then you can also pay 3 mana and discard a card from your hand to deal 2 damage to each opponent. So it can get rid of extra cards on its own. It's not always going to be able to attack the turn you play it, but it often can. And it's very, very hard to get rid of. In addition to that, it just fits sort of the haste theme of the mono red deck. Just just really powerful.
Yeah. Chat's telling me I can't tell you that's not funny after laughing that hard. I don't know how to respond. Sometimes you have like awkward laugh. It's like, yeah, that's probably
no, true. I mean, we seriously talked about that. He was like, there were so many times in our testing where they were playing four Hazorettes in their mono red deck. They were like, so if you're going to watch your opponent for cheating, watch them for slipping cards into their lap, not slipping right? cards out of their lap.
Especially when you think about like the fact that like, what if your Hazorette gets stranded in your hand, right? Especially, anyway. Also, yeah. I really hate, I kind of want to address this for just a second. I don't think that the Pro Tour is where most cheating happens. I think that actually happens at the PPTQ level. So,
yeah, I mean, to be fair, we were laughing hysterically about it as he was saying this. But then I was thinking about it more, and I was like, oh, man, I mean...
Well, right, it's the likely one to happen, but I don't want people to think that, like...
Sure.
The Pro Tour is where cheating happens. It actually isn't. It's actually typically at lower levels of Magic. But anyway, regardless, Hazorette clearly deserves the card of the week. It took over the tournament. It took over so many games. And it is probably now one of the top five most memorable plays in Pro Tour history.
Oh, yeah. I felt so bad. If only because he played to the out so well. And, yeah. You know, it's the kind of thing that happens sometimes when you're playing your...
It's so hard because you're like... You're kind of rooting against the guy because of the way he draws cards, which is ridiculous, but you do.
Oh, man,
like,
I love that. I love that. See, I was watching him play a Swiss round and saw him doing that and had never seen him play before and figured he was going to win or lose based on what he drew and, you know, thought it was, like, fine. And he drew a land and slammed his Hazorette and attacked his opponent. And then his opponent just, like, untapped, grasped his Hazorette and won the game. And I was like... But why are we drawing cards like this if it's not the last turn? So I appreciate the drama that inserts into every turn of every game.
Okay. We'll be one-sided on either way. Hazorette was a huge part of this tournament. It was beautiful to watch people kind of leverage the game around a card that's so powerful in their decks. And Easton, we look forward to giving you a playset of these and helping you fill out your Magic collection. If there is a card that is going to probably retain its value for a little while, Hazorette's going to be one of them. So just shoot me a message and we'll hook you up with some of those. So if you want to be eligible for this, just go to patreon.com/ccmtg, become a patron of $3 or more per month. Let's get right into the meat of the show. We're going to do the power rankings. So we're going to talk about the decks that did well at the Pro Tour, and then we're going to talk about specifically what Michael played, what the team played, what our testing was like. Let's start with the power rankings. So for this tournament, we gave points according to the number of points they received in their constructed rounds. And then we gave 1 point for 18 to 20, 5 points for 21 to 23, so on and so on, going all the way up to 4 points. So coming in with 10 points in fifth place, we have Teemer Energy. So I want to say that, like, I think that there were three real decks at this tournament and everything else did not succeed. And I think Teemer Energy was just one of the top decks that didn't succeed.
Yeah, I mean, I think the point breakdown makes that pretty clear. But Teemer Energy just... I'm sure you can compete with Mono Red when you draw a Whirler Virtuoso, but outside of that, that matchup is pretty bad. I don't think of Zombies as being a great matchup, and I don't know that Snake is an especially great... It's probably okay, but it's not like... You're not, like, dying to face it.
So my problem with this deck is, like, originally, the deck is basically good when you draw a Glorybringer, or multiple Glorybringers, right, in the old meta. And in this new meta... That's not even good because you're playing against Mono Red so much. So it's like, what is your deck good against now?
Right. The cards we're trying to draw are different. So, I mean, I think on the whole, it's still like a relatively synergistic pile of, you know, mostly good cards. I mean, I don't think it's like an incredibly terrible choice. It's just not one I think I would go out of my way for.
Yeah, and...
Okay, but
that doesn't mean that you can't build it.
It did produce the sweetest coverage game I've ever seen.
Oh, go ahead.
So, Reed and Huey are playing in round four.
That was sweet.
And Reed pummeled Huey. Reed was playing Nicol Bolas in his Teemer Energy deck and stole Ronus and Pummeler, and then pummeled Huey with his own Pummeler. That was awesome.
That was pretty cool. How were you watching that?
Well, we watched a video of it later.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That was cool.
I do think that Teemer Energy just has to be, like, clearly the energy package is good enough to see play in a standard format. We just have to find the way to build it. And the way that it was constructed that a lot of people played at the Pro Tour just probably isn't the way to build it right now. So we kind of have to figure out, like, what is the removal package that this deck needs, and then how we build our deck accordingly.
And how do you build the high end of the deck? Because I think there are a lot of questions with, like, how many Bristling Hydras to Glorybringers to, like, Nicol Boluses do you really
to Chandra, to anything, right? Like,
right, yes. All of your, like, fours and fives are sort of up for debate in a way that wasn't the case going into this tournament. So I think that could lead to maybe some interesting deck building choices going forward that could make this deck a little bit better. But in its current iteration, my guess is neither of us would be very interested in playing this.
Yep. Coming in fourth place with 11 points, we have Mardu Vehicles. I'm not going to lie, I actually think this deck is even worse positioned than Teemer is.
I think it depends on how this deck is built. There were some really interesting lists to come out of this Pro Tour. Raph Levy, in particular, played 6 total vehicles, 3 Hearts, 3 Harvesters, and Glint Nest Crane.
Yeah, that list is actually not in these points. That is listed as 4 color vehicles. I actually thought it was just a completely different archetype and did not include its points in here.
It's still, you know, it's Heart of Curin,
sure.
Craft Exemplar, right?
Sure. That's,
so there are all kinds of things you could. There are places to go from here, right? Just like last season, at times we saw that Mardu was not especially well positioned. I think at that point, because Unlicensed wasn't a great Magic card, but things. There's a lot of flexibility in the shell, right? I mean, all you're really locked into is Thraben Inspector, Toolcraft Exemplar, Heart of Curin, Gideon.
And when I say that I don't think that the deck is as well positioned as Teemer, I actually mean that this deck needs a dramatic shift, but that doesn't mean that it can't have it. Like, Mardu has the tools to do that. It's just time to do it. You can't just sit on your laurels and say, well, I'm a Mardu player, so I'm going to play Mardu. Like, no. You actually need to go out and innovate if you want to continue to play this deck you love.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, like, you at least need Walking Ballistas and Aethersphere Harvesters at a very minimum level.
And to be fair, it's not like those cards are unreasonable, right? Like, they're good Magic cards. It's just time to build your deck with them.
Right. I think just with the shift towards so much mono red, you have to look at being the bigger of the two decks much more often. That's all.
What did you think of the inclusion of Nerd Ape in so many lists?
So I understand why. The problem is that it's not very good against Snake or Mono Black, so I think it's maybe a little bit of a short-sighted inclusion. Like, you have to figure out ways. Like, one of the things I liked about Raph Levy's list in particular was that he seemed to foresee the second level a little bit as well and built a deck with a bunch of flyers, which sure. would dramatically improve both your Zombie and Snake matchups.
So I agree.
I think it's just about, you know, deck building and how do you end up where you end up.
Yep. So if you think about, like, did we lose me? Oh, all right. That was weird. That was a weird moment in my life. I think that when you think about, like, something specifically like Glint Nest Crane, like, it really allows you to build your deck differently and include cards that, like, try to include a package that's good in multiple matchups, so.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. And I mean, more than like saying, hey, this is how I want to build vehicles, what I'm really saying is, like, there's space to innovate and,
yep.
It may well be worth exploring.
I agree. Coming in third place with 31 points, we have Green Black Snake Decks at Large. Michael, go first. Go ahead. What do you think?
I assume this included Energy, and it looked like Mass Drop played a hybrid build. And then I know that Sam Party played, heavily leaning towards the Delirium side, although the Delirium side these days is really just Traverse and Grimflayer.
Yep. So most of the lists that are Delirium decks are basically just, enabling Traverse the Uvenwald. Even some of the ones that were enabling Traverse didn't actually play Grimflayer.
Yeah. I mean, that's actually the bigger question. I mean, the problem is that Grimflayer is so good at enabling Delirium, it's a little bit hard to figure out how good Traverse is without him. But I can appreciate being torn about Grimflayer. I mean, a 2-mana 2/2 in a format where you're mostly playing against decks with a ton of burn spells.
Yeah. And, to be fair, the decks that finished with the most points actually were energy versions rather than Delirium versions. However, the way the points skewed was more towards Delirium than energy, so it kind of just depends on how you look at it. And then there's the hybrid versions also that kind of occupied some of that space. So the hybrid versions, meaning they weren't energy decks, they weren't Delirium decks, they actually just played more lands is what it comes down to.
Well, I saw that. I also saw, I know Mousedrop in particular was playing some sort of split of Attune with Aether and Oath of Nyssa, which seemed sort of interesting. I don't know exactly what people were playing, but this was a deck where it was very split on how to build it.
Yeah. If you actually look at the Moto PTQ results just following the Pro Tour, almost all of the highest finished deck lists were Delirium centric, meaning Traverse decks. And for me, that's how I would go about building this deck for a few reasons. One, I think Walking Ballista is very powerful and very important in this format, and that just already leans you towards Traverse rather than Attune with Aether. And two, if you're going to have a density of threats in your deck for your bad matchups, I don't want to be on the energy side, because then Attune is a very dead draw late game, whereas Traverse can actually be a live draw to keep me in games that I wouldn't be winning with energy.
That's true. I also, in general, wonder, to me, the bigger question is how good is Long Tusk Cub? And if you expect to play a lot of green-black mirrors and against zombies a lot, I don't really want Blossoming Defense in my deck, and I don't really want Long Tusk Cub in my deck. And the bigger question is, like, what two drops... I think Traverse is slightly better than Attune. It's mostly Attune that every once in a while is a lot better. It's like mostly slightly worse than Attune, but every once in a while is a lot better. So I think in the end, that ends up being closer to a wash than I think it looks on paper. But it comes down to like two drop preference a lot.
Can I actually ask about that? Okay, you think that two energy in the energy deck is better than the late game versatility of
particularly good at actually enabling Delirium. Like, any draw without Walking Ballista is going to really struggle. If you're getting put on the back foot a lot, it's not like Grimflayer is going to collect a lot against zombies either.
I actually don't think that's very true. I think that your second Traverse is almost always enabled.
Sure. So, the other cost is Evolving Wilds, specifically, which...
Oh, sure. So, if you... Okay, that's true. You do have to play Evolving Wilds in this. That's fair. There are a lot of people that hate Evolving Wilds. I can understand that.
I just think that when you weigh out everything, those are actually pretty close, and it probably depends on whether you like Grimflayer or Long Tusk Cub better. I don't love either of them right now.
The truth is that I really like Tireless Tracker, so I would be playing Evolving Wilds anyway.
Right. And that may end up being just correct. All I'm really trying to say is that I think that both are justifiable, and it really comes down to what you expect.
So can you go a little bit on depth on what you're saying about the two drops, though? I've kind of interrupted you a few times, and I'd like to...
Sure. So I think Long Tusk Cub is really good if you're playing against Mono Red a lot, like much better than Grimflayer, in that it can turn resources that you're not really using. Like if you go Attune into Long Tusk Cub, they can't shock it, for example. Things like that. You can turn some of these extra resources into just a single big creature, and going tall is really good against Mono Red. Like having one larger creature is sometimes going to be better than having multiple slightly smaller creatures. It's hard to attack with Grimflayer very much in that matchup. So that would be a matchup where it's actually probably quite challenging to get Delirium. But against zombies specifically, I don't think either of them is very good, but my guess is that Grimflayer is better just because he's not asking for additional resources in the way Long Tusk Cub is. But in every deck I've ever played with Long Tusk Cub, it's been mostly terrible against zombies, just because they're so good at producing a wave of blockers that it's almost impossible to ever actually connect with it.
I actually find it's almost impossible to attack with Long Tusk Cub in those matchups.
Sure, right. I mean, yeah, but you get into these border states where you're just like, if they want to block, they can just kill it. So I can't really generate enough energy off of it to snowball. And right. if I do attack and like use a Blossoming Defense, I'm just trading a Blossoming Defense for a 2-2.
Yeah. Right?
It's not.
And you still didn't get the energy, so right. it can just escalate right. anyway.
It just soaks up a lot of resources in those matchups. I don't think it's very good.
Yeah. One of my problems with green-black in general is its mono-black zombies matchup. When I'm looking at the decks from the Pro Tour, I actually don't think that a lot of those players realized how popular Zombies was going to be, and they suffered because of it. I don't know if I have the correct answers. I just posted it.
You want to be able to go a little bit bigger, though, right? I mean, that's yeah. one of the other reasons, like, in the boarded games, you want to try to play a little bit as the control deck.
I actually think that's just another reason that I like the Delirium versions a little bit better, is because you get to play, like, the benefit of playing the cards that you want to play in specific matchups is really easy, and Kalidus is just one of those cards at this point. So being able to either tutor thing like a Walking Ballista with the Kalidus in play or things like that, there's just a lot that goes into that aspect of it. And I also think that the Delirium versions are more tilted to run things like Yanni's Expertise out of the board, whereas the Energy versions just, you have to completely change your deck to do something like that. And I think that as this format moves forward, we might see that more often, so that these decks can fight things like, you know, Zombies right now, which is honestly not that great of a matchup. And then as the format evolves, you could see people trying to do, you know, Fumigate decks, which are a bad matchup for you. And I would much rather be on the Delirium side where I can transform a little bit against that deck than the Energy side where I probably am locked into what I'm doing.
Right. You want some Planeswalkers, and you just want to slow down a little bit in general in some of those matchups.
Let's actually go to the number two deck, which is Zombies, coming in at 43 points. This deck was a surprise for me.
Interesting. So I knew this deck had a pretty good mono-red matchup. I knew it also had a bad control matchup, but it makes sense as sort of a, if mono-red is level zero, Zombies is sort of level one.
I felt like it also had a bad Monument matchup, though.
I think, so the testing we did showed that Monument could not actually beat Mono Red.
Well, right, so hold on. The testing we did said that Monument couldn't beat anything but Zombies and Energy and Mardu.
Right, right. So, but like, I mean, if you fixate on Mono Red as the central point, that I think everyone fixated on Mono Red as the central point with which they made their choices around.
Sure.
Right? It was like, either I'm going to play Mono Red or I'm going to play something that I believe beats Mono Red. No one just ignored it.
Sure.
So I think basically if you played Monument versus Mono Red, you probably pretty quickly found that the Monument deck was quite unfavored and just decided no one would play it.
Okay.
So I think that just probably wasn't a consideration.
Oh, that's no. And I'm glad that we get to talk about that. And I think that that is what happened, and that's why Zombies became the portion of the metagame that it was. I would like to touch on like the difference of the removal package too. Like, they've also adjusted the way they built their decks to include more grasps because of this mono red matchup.
Yeah, I assume that they figured out they were generally only losing to like either just the really good mono red draws when mono red was on the play, or they were sometimes getting sort of cheesed out by a quick Hazoret. So I think that like what really is indicated by the top three here as a whole is that people either decided to play Hazoret or ways to kill Hazoret specifically.
People don't know what number one is yet, Michael.
Yeah, I mean, right, but that was your choice, right? So if you weren't going to, because people played a lot of Grasp of Darkness in their black-green decks, too.
That's a card
that people had slipped down a little bit on before this event. And
yeah, a lot of people were playing Murder. Yeah.
I'm assuming that in testing, they basically found that nothing actually beats Hazoret if you don't have ways to kill it.
Yep.
So the zombie deck actually has 8 cards that kill it with 4 Grasps and often Dark Salvation.
Yep.
So I would assume that's a big draw as well. Just the whole, like, Onkrop, Crasher, Earthshaker, Kenra are not that good against Zombies, right?
Yep.
They just play a guy every single turn of every single game.
Yep. All right, let's go to number one. Coming in with 64 triple points, we have Mono Red. I just want to say that there was a lot of Reddit conversation about the banning of Mono Red after this Pro Tour. And you can't just call for bannings every single tournament, people. That's just ridiculous.
It's like not even... It's only double the third place deck and like half again the second. The second and third combined are more than it.
Right. Green, white, and Abzan had better results than this deck.
Stop calling so much. I mean, not
stop
the Pro
calling
Tour
for bannings. Sure.
Right. But it's more of a problem.
So not at the Pro Tour, but there were top eights that all eight of them were green,
or,
white.
Right. Or it was like seven. Yeah. No. And what I'm saying is that that's actually more of a problem. Right. This is a much less solved. This is like a level one metagame where then you get to iterate on it going forward.
Whereas green white was like level three, like we've actually figured out this format. Nothing beats this right now.
Yes.
I think that red. First of all, that was one of the most fun Pro Tours I've ever watched, like ever. I actually thoroughly enjoyed it. It was exciting. It was fun. It looked fun to play. It looked exciting to play. And I actually have missed having a legitimate aggro deck in Standard. I legitimately have missed it.
I think the mono red decks are relatively interesting, and I think that. Building them was interesting for the Pro Tour and will likely be interesting going forward.
I agree. I agree completely. I think that, you know, there were so many different things that people were trying to do. You know, whether it was trying to make it so that Soulscar Mage could legitimately replace Village Messenger, or there was just saying, screw it, like, I guess I'm playing Village Messenger. Like, there were actually interesting decisions going into this.
Definitely. Definitely. I think that the decks were relatively interesting. We saw some very different looking mono red decks in the top
different
eight.
Sideboards. Very different sideboards.
And how you were supposed to board in the mirror and that kind of stuff was really quite interesting. I don't know. I mean, I get that some of the games are relatively uninteractive, but I think mono red just makes it obvious that's happening. That happens all the time anyways.
Yep.
Right, one person draws a bad half of their deck, and it's less obvious when you're not getting attacked for six on turn three over and over and over again. But
and we'll get more into this as we go into our training grounds, which is going to be our Pro Tour special, which after this quick break, we will come right back and talk about the deck that Michael played, our team testing, and our overall impressions. So we'll be right back. We are back. Thank you so much for your patience. So let's go right into our training grounds. This week we want to just talk about Pro Tour Hour of Devastation, and talk about our experience, whether it's Michael at the Pro Tour or the experience going into it. So Michael, let's start with you, man. What deck did you play at Pro Tour Hour of Devastation?
So I ended up playing Mono Red. We settled on a build that was my baby with 23 lands and 3 Hazoret, which pretty clearly ended up being kind of probably just right on both counts.
Sure.
But, you know, more or less just mono red. Just about what you'd expect looking at lists.
So were you like on a Village Messenger list? Were you on a Soulscar Mage list?
So we were on Village Messenger. We almost switched. We talked a little bit about switching to Soulscar Mage as more and more burn spells made their way into the deck, but didn't pull the trigger on it. And that was probably the one, like, pretty clearly bad choice that we made. Outside of that, I was pretty happy with it.
So do you kind of wish that you'd, like, I think you played 3 Incendiary Flow, is that correct?
Yeah, we played 3 Incendiary Flow, 2 Abrades, and 4 Shocks.
Do you kind of wish that you could have upped that Incendiary Flow or Braid count and then switched over to Soulscar Mage then?
Yeah, I mean, if I were to, like, register for that event again, I would cut the Village Messengers for Soulscar Mages, and then I would cut the Eldrazi Obligators for 2 Collector Defiance and the 4th Incendiary Flow.
Oh, wow. So kind of a pretty big change there.
So, I mean, it's like actually changing 3 slots and then just switching the 1-drops to better match the rest of the spells.
Awesome. Okay, cool. So why did you pick Mono Red?
I mean, we tested a bunch of stuff. Like, we really did test a whole bunch of stuff. And even the things that seemed like they should have great Mono Red matchups kept losing on the draw. I don't think we had anything that was, like, much better than 50-50. against mono red. It started feeling like almost no matter what you were playing, if mono red drew well, you were in for a bad time.
Yeah, do you think that is indicative of not willing to go in on all in against mono red? Like, I'm sure that if you just built your deck to like beat them or match them on efficiency while also playing bigger creatures, you could do that. It would just be a very inbred deck.
Yeah, I mean, you have to be a little bit careful about getting like way too inbred. You can definitely show up with a deck that just isn't actually, like, if you build a deck that's actually incapable of winning other matchups, I'm pretty sure you could have had a good red matchup. But none of the, like, stock decks we tested seemed even favored against mono-red. And even the things that you would think would be pretty good.
Okay. Did the meta match the things that you thought and that you think that the team as a whole thought would happen?
So, I mean, by the time we were in Japan, we'd basically reasoned out what the top three would be. We thought some percentage more people might have figured out some version of control that wasn't awful, and might limit the actuals or ramp, and that might limit the success of the green, black, and zombie decks a little bit. I mean, neither of those matchups are great for green, black, or zombies. Like, if anyone has figured out a good control list or a good ramp list, those would be pretty easy targets, I would think. So we thought that those decks might be pushed down a little bit. But it basically, we were very sure that those three were going to be like three of the top four.
Yeah, in the testing that I did with Danny and then the testing that I did with kind of the group as a whole, one of the things that I thought was mono red is clearly the best deck. I thought that second best was probably green black, and I thought that it was also the only deck that I felt like legitimately favored post board against mono red with. Like your game one matchup was very play draw dependent, and then post board you were favored. But the thing is with mono red that every deck is super play draw dependent. So if I was going to play a non mono red deck, I wanted it to be one that was like, okay, post board, like, I legitimately feel good against this deck. And then, kind of like you, I actually had the opposite thought. I actually don't think that people are going to figure out ramp, and I actually don't think they're going to figure out control. And because of that, I think green-black is very well positioned. I actually was a little bit surprised by zombies. So here's the thing. I maybe didn't give enough credit to the hive mind of Magic, because I thought way more people would still show up with blue-white, and they would just start knocking heads with zombies players and keep zombies down. Like, it was just, people were so in love with that deck, I just didn't think, I thought some people would be like, okay, I'm good, I don't need to worry about it. Like, I'm just going to focus on limited, because there's a lot of those players that exist going to the Pro Tour.
So
it didn't happen.
Yeah, I think that's true, but I think the mono red matchup was so bad for Monument that it was like in the unignorable kind of level. Like you played this matchup, you played 10 matches and you're probably going to lose 7 of them.
No, I agree. I think it was really terrible.
It was getting to the point where like you would have been the person who, you know, was like, "Hey, I'm trying to ignore this and just play a deck." And one of your friends would have been like, "You cannot play Monument, play Mono Red instead."
But even the week before the Pro Tour, Jerry Thompson recorded a podcast that he's like, "My fallback deck is Monument and I feel fine, so I'm just going to like try other stuff."
Yeah, my guess is they just, like everyone, as their Mono Red lists improved, the Monument deck just started getting crushed.
Right, but like, that's why I agree with you. I'm just saying like, why my conclusion was what I came to was, there are people that are going to just play Monument, and I think that I was wrong. I think that those people existed. They got crushed.
Right. I think that, like, basically every single person who was on any sort of team probably did not play Monument.
Yeah. There was a total of one Monument deck that got points in the entire tournament.
Yeah.
In our power rankings. I think that, honestly, like, when I did my analysis for our $5 for our Constructed Critics of our Pro Tour testing, I said that there's no chance that anybody's playing Monument. Like, on our team. That's not happening. We can't figure out how to make this deck beat some of the top decks in our testing. It's just not happening.
I mean, I think you specifically said any of the top decks in our testing. But yeah, I mean, it started feeling close to that category.
Yeah. Like, I mean, like, the top decks in our testing were Green Black and Mono Red, which both have really good matchups against Mono Red and Green Black, in my opinion, were the best decks in our testing. And Monument just, like, had a bad, like, just bad. Like, and especially against Mono Red, it was just bad.
Yeah. Green Black, they can beat it sometimes. Like, the actual Monument draws and, like, Spell Queller is good sometimes, and it's more achievable. Against Mono Red, it felt like play or draw. The cards just lined up badly.
I also felt like the Avacyn versions were way more favored against Green Black than the non-Avacyn versions of the deck, which I feel like is...
Yeah, Avacyn might have helped your Mono Red matchup too. When I tested Mardu, I felt like that card was really good against Mono Red, so... It's possible that there's, like, a version of something like that out there that exists that's better.
Sure.
But the iteration that people had from, like, the SCG was mostly unplayable.
So you kind of already have mentioned, like, the things that you change in your deck. I'd like to kind of cover, like, the changes that I made because of our testing. So one of the things that happened pretty quickly is the cutting of things like Noxious Gearhulk from Green-Black. Was pretty clear. I did some testing with Alex, and it was like, all right, what really needs to be here is Kalidus. It's good in similar matchups, but also way better against Mono Red. Then you have decks that kind of... you actually mentioned this. I don't know if it was in our group or in the Constructive Criticism family group, but early on, like, Alex was in, like, this green-black deck that was, like, super mid-rangey, but also played, like, Shock and Fatal Push.
Oh, black-red. Black-red, yeah.
And it was like... If this deck can't beat Mono Red, nothing can. And I think that really influenced, like, the card choices going into lots of different decks in our testing. And this is level one testing. So we want to be clear, this isn't inbred testing, right? This is, okay, if we can't beat Mono Red, we still have to make the best versions of these decks against the best deck in our testing, which is Mono Red. So I think that there are a few things that became pretty clear to me from, like, our initial stuff. One is we couldn't make Mardu the deck that we thought it would be against Mono Red. I think that this happened specifically for you on that Saturday that we tested at Oasis, where I saw you gemming against Mardu for a little bit with Mono Red and against... I don't know if you actually played the Mardu side, but it was pretty clear that day that, like, Mardu wasn't doing what you thought it would do in that matchup.
You were going to have to play... So that Mono Red list had zero Abrades in the main, and... If you were going to play Mardu, you were going to have to play Aethersphere Harvester and probably Walking Ballista. And then that hurts some of your other matchups enough that I'm just not sure it's worth it.
Yeah, and like you said, against that version, you were even playing a Braid at that point.
Right. So, you know, not that, like, I mean, at the Pro Tour, for example, I did lose to Mono Red, or to Mardu, rather, with, you know, Walking Ballista and Aethersphere Harvester. But... You were going to have to play both of those cards, and I did not really want to play either of them because they're pretty bad in every other matchup. And that kind of, you know, that informs a lot of your choices then. Like, you don't want to have to play a version of a... You don't want to play a version that you hate of a deck that you like.
Yes.
If you can avoid it, right?
I agree.
It's just asking a lot of yourself. If you're playing, like, 6 to 8 cards that you're kind of upset every time you draw them, it makes losing really frustrating.
So the next thing in here is, like, what deck would I have played? It's pretty clear. I would have played Green-Black. I think I mentioned that a little bit earlier. The specific reason that I would have played it over Mono-Red is because I think I would have gotten the metagame a little bit wrong. I still think I would have, like, I would have been happy with my decision, but I do think that having a better sideboard for Mono Red is probably the better decision. But I would have ended up on Green Black, and I would have picked it because specifically I think that Green Black Delirium with the right sideboard can beat Zombies and Mono Red, and I actually think it's favored against Mono Red. And I did some more testing this week against Mono Red with my sideboard, and I think that's true. But I was pretty... the other deck that I was considering, which is the other deck that our team played, was actually Pummeler.
Yeah, I think that Pummeler is fine in terms of positioning. It's just starting to... It's like... It's really close to sliding too far down the bad deck ladder. You know what I mean? Like, you're just... Yeah. You're signing up for a lot of variants. Your black-green matchup is also abysmal.
Right.
Yeah.
No, it's true. And I think that there are things that people tried to do, like playing main deck Lethunuhellion. They were like trying to kind of combat some of the problems with the deck.
Yeah, I know that Danny and Alex, we ended up, you know, we spent some time working on their deck list as well, and ended up sideboarding both Greenbelt Rampagers and Lethunuhellions. That are very good in the like more attrition-y matchups. They're also really good if people are playing Abrades. You could sometimes catch some of the mono red decks with their pants down a little bit, where they would, you know, side in all this removal against you, and you would just take out the Pummelers and jam Hellions and Rampagers, and they look really dumb having a bunch of Shocks and Abrades. So there were some interesting things to do with that deck, but I think in the end, the mono red matchup was maybe a little too suspect, and then green black is just unfixable.
It's so funny because I think that the other thing that I thought before you guys left is just how well that blue white God Pharaoh's deck ended up playing just in the short time that I got to play against it. I was like, oh, that's surprisingly good. Like, and then it won another PTQ right after that. And Pummeler seemed to have the best matchup against that deck.
That was definitely true. I would say that in the testing I did against that deck, I didn't come to the impression that it was actually favored against mono red.
No, I actually don't think it was favored against mono red either. What I'm saying is Pummeler had the best matchup against it out of all of the decks we played.
Right. I mean, what I meant was that I ended up feeling like that deck probably just wouldn't be very good based
on... Oh, because of the mono-red matchup. I understand what you're saying. Okay.
Yeah, that if it wasn't really a deck I expected a lot of play for sort of the same reasons as everything else, that if we start with the decree that you must either be mono-red or be good against mono-red, I wasn't really sure that the God Pharaoh's Gift deck passed that test.
Is there things that you didn't do that you wish you had done in the testing process this time?
I wish we had gone a little bit deeper on beating the mono red mirror under the assumption that other people would also play the extra lands and figure out extra Hazorettes. Because the things that I was happy with in the mirror, like we did all of our testing against... It's kind of really weird to like build a deck from scratch and then jam it against itself and try to win the mirror from there. But all the mono red mirror testing I did was against decks with lower land counts, and I thought that mostly just having more burn spells and land count was a major difference. And I do think that's true. I mean, I certainly think that compared to like the 21 land decks that existed in the iterations before the Pro Tour, the deck that I played was very good against those decks. But going a little bit deeper probably would have led to actually registering Soulscar Mages and...
Sure.
That obviously would have been better.
Yeah, I think that if there's one thing that I would have changed this time around, I don't know. I didn't feel as involved this time. I did a lot of theory crafting with people and things like that, and I hope that I was helpful. You know, there's a lot of... When you're on a team of people testing and you're not qualified, your job is kind of let them tell you what to do. And, you know, as somebody who was, like, still trying to get help because of the RPTQ in Denver and things like that, it was interesting because I don't want to be selfish, right? I want to be like, hey, I also need a test because of these other events. But the truth is, like, the important thing is actually the Pro Tour that's coming up. And Michael and Danny and Alex's testing is far more important than anything that I have coming up. And it needs to be focused on that. However, I do wish... I do think that there was a lot of discounting of ideas for this Pro Tour long before games were played. And I think that our team as a whole has gotten to a point of a little bit of negativity around ideas in Magic. I actually saw this when another one of my friends was qualified for a Pro Tour, basically discounting ideas, calling everything bad. And I think that when you do that, you open yourself up to real failure by not having an open mind, which is one of the key points that we make on this podcast about getting better at Magic. And I do think that we suffered from that as a group this Pro Tour. And, you know, somebody pointed out that Michael's comments about Mono Red early on in this format, that he said, excuse me, that things would have to go really sideways for him to play it. And I do think that that was a symptom of not keeping an open mind. Michael did end up playing Mono Red, so it's not like it mattered. No.
What I would say is things did go sideways. We tried some things that looked like they'd be really good against Mono Red, and they just weren't.
Sure.
I mean,
But my point is that I did feel the negativity around the group, and I hope that that's something that we can fix in the future. So, Michael, RPTQ's coming up. You got to win that plane ticket. Right?
Yeah, I'm not sure what I would lean towards. I need to see kind of what happens in the GP this weekend and go from there.
Yeah, I looked at the PTQ results. Lots of zombies, lots of green-black. I actually think it was an overcorrection to the Pro Tour. So I actually don't know how I feel about those results. I'm kind of thinking the same way Michael is right now. I'd like to see GP results. I have a few decks that I'm considering. I saw the new style of ramp deck playing Jotty Offshoot that I'm interested in trying out. I saw the stuff that people are doing to their mono-red lists that I'm interested in, and then there's obviously green-black. So that's kind of where I'm at. Is there anything that you're targeting when watching that you feel a little bit more comfortable sliding into?
I think that, I can say I think I'm unlikely to play zombies because I think that deck really has one great matchup. And it's probably not great. It has one pretty good matchup, that being mono red.
But I think it's good against green black.
It depends on how your green black deck is built. I think it's less good against green black when you are aware that zombies is something you're trying to beat.
Yes.
Just in general, just like the sideboard. I think in the pre-board games, you're probably going to be favored no matter how you build green-black. But I think in the sideboarded games, if green-black is built more like to kind of side into a real control deck in that matchup, it's not really good for zombies. So my inclination would be not to play zombies. But it's also not like I've spent a bunch of time testing zombies and that's based on, you know, it's more based on gut feel than
sure
anything more real than that.
All right. Well, that's it for this week on the Training Grounds. Thank you, everybody, so much for your support. Don't forget you can get a Patreon by going to patreon.com/ccmdg. $1 more per month, anything is really appreciated. You can find me on Facebook at Spencer Stephen Halland. You can find me on Twitter at Spencer13H. You can find the podcast at CCMTG on Twitter. You can like us on Facebook at Constructive Criticism. You can join the Constructive Criticism family on Facebook. And if you're a patron of $5 or more per month, you can ask and join the Constructive Critics group. You can also join the Discord channel. It's all in the... oh my gosh, blanking.
Show notes?
No, not the show notes. The page on the website. What is it called? The bios page. There we go. Michael, where can people find you?
You can find me on Facebook. My name is Michael Hinderocker. You can also find me on Twitter at MagicMikeMTG. Feel free to message me or whatever, and I will do my best to respond.
You can also join the conversation by tweeting at us with hashtag would that be good. Hashtag would that be good is our Twitter outreach program. If you tweet it, we'll read it. So let's get right into these tweets this week. Let's see here. We going down to transforming as the Gatewatch V2 led by Optimus Prime and Sam Witwicky, hashtag MTG, hashtag would be good. Oh, Transformers, not transforming. Okay. Would that be good? 4 votes, 75% said no. I agree. Let's not cross genres here. Michael?
I feel like that would be a tough sell as a set.
I mean, I'm trying to imagine. We're already going dinosaurs and pirates next set. It's not that far off till we go to robots and ninjas. Well, I did know that the Hascon promo was Transformers, as my producer saying in my ear. I'm just saying that as a whole set, it probably doesn't work.
Yeah, I don't even want it as a single card.
Yeah. All I really want to be is one-third as good at Magic as PVDDR, but honestly, at this point, I take 1/12th as good. Hashtag MTG, hashtag would that be good. Yeah. One-third would be insane. That's all I'm saying. But 1/12th, I would take.
Yeah, that seems pretty good. I mean, so 1/12th as good of results, or 1/12th? Because 1/12th as good might actually just, you know, like, make you not very good at Magic.
I'm just saying that if we use results as a metric.
Okay. Okay. All right. If we're going to do that, yes, I would take a Pro Tour top 8.
But would you take 1/3? By that, I mean, would you like to be in the Hall of Fame right now? If let's be clear. If you have 1/3 of the results of Paulo Vitor Dama de Rosa, you're a lock for the Hall of Fame.
Well, I mean, I'd prefer to, like, actually experience top 8ing those Pro Tours, not just, like, you know, somehow be in the Hall of Fame. That would be
well,
weird.
Well, obviously, but you get to experience it.
but
I'm
yeah,
not just saying tomorrow. I'm not saying tomorrow you have 4 top 8s. I'm saying
yeah, that would be weird.
That would be weird. I'm just like, it's just I thought it was a funny tweet, and you dissected it. You dissected my joke. I don't.
Sometimes you have to fully explain things.
I don't make wishes at Jeskai Ascendancy. GGs. That's really good. So, Michael, you weren't here, but Andrew tweeted that he was going to crush Mason and tweeted it with hashtag weather be good. And Mason subbed in for you and said, quote, I don't do make-a-wishes when he read the tweet, and then crushed Andrew in the tournament.
That's so harsh.
And then proceeded to tweet, I don't do make-a-wishes. Mason is savage.
That is savage. Like, maybe too savage. Like, not gonna have any friends left.
Yeah, this dude's your friend, like.
That'd be nice, Mason.
Yeah, Mason. At CCMTG, 50 cents extra for pineapple on barbecue chicken bacon flatbread pizza. Mason has picks. Hashtag would be good. Can confirm, yes. All right, so we go to Sean's name, click on it. We go to the little three arrows. We click on block. It asks us to confirm. All right. All right. That's what we do with pineapple pizza tweets. The Matt says, congrats PVDDR on winning Pro Tour Hour. Just hope he's mentioned his sponsor, Olive Garden, during the sacred. Man.
That would be good. Man, I wish interviews were way more cheesy. Speaking of cheese,
oh man.
See, I'm gonna be good at this someday.
Yeah. I just wanna say that, like, I feel like the whole world was rooting for PV, like, the whole time it felt like. Like, everybody was rooting for him. Like, and I was really glad he won. I was really sad to, like.
Were you watching from an Olive Garden?
No, dude. Do you know what time it was here?
Because the staff probably is required to root for
him. I stayed up so late watching that. SOV Mason said, I'm almost his favorite Andrew Elliott. I am his most favorite Andrew Elliott he's ever met. Hashtag let me good. Hashtag.
Dear diary.
Dear diary?
That's either a high standard or a low standard, depending on, you know, could be, like, more than one.
Sure. Is that a high standard if there's two?
I mean, it's better than one. I'd rather be first out of two than first out of one.
In prep for my game day, I like the PT top 8 green blacklist, but my meta plays a lot of teamer energy. What cards are good to add? Hashtag would that be good. So, I think that, like, you could kind of build your package to beat that. One of the things that we did was trying Noxious Gearhulk in the main if there was a lot of that, But honestly, in my opinion, I would just play the best version of the deck that you believe, like, that you believe in, and not try and over metagame for your local game day. I think that what will end up happening is other people will do that, and you'll beat them because of it. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I mean, if you wanted to play green-black specifically, like, my guess is that whatever is best against Glorybringer is going to be best against. So, like, maybe non-zero Blossoming Defense or more Rishkar or something like that. I mean, I'm just trying to think of what can get your creatures out of that range. But, you know, honestly, it probably, if you play any deck well, you're probably going to be mostly favored.
Yep. Mason, I just want to say that hashtag really good is not your way to insert MTG drama into this podcast, which you try to do with this next tweet. Finkel, PV, Kai, that's the new top three for GOAT. Hashtag really good. I'm just going to say this. If your argument for Kai is his number of wins, but you still have Finkel ahead of him, then it's the same argument as Bill Russell over Michael Jordan at this point. Like, either the championships matter and Kai's the best, or you have an objective view of something other than championships and Kai's not in the top two. Like,
well, this is Finkel, PV, Kai.
Right, but I think he's not saying in, the top in that two. Order. Well, right.
Finkel first.
The argument is that people are saying PV has still not caught up to Kai, and like, you can think what you want. I
read this as Finkel 1, PV 2, Kai 3.
That is what Mason is saying. He's talking about the drama that is people saying PV has passed Kai.
Oh. It seems like a stupid thing to argue about anyways.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. We really appreciate you guys. It means the world to us. Michael, what did you learn this week?
Well, I learned that people care a lot about who other people think is the best, which is a weird thing to care about.
We'll see you guys all next week.